So this is the third week of creation time. And for those of you who have been here the last couple of weeks, you might remember, or you might not, that we started off by talking about beauty. We talked about what's our starting point when we think about our responsibility to the earth. It has to be the beauty of creation and a sense of thanksgiving. We won't get very far if our starting point is guilt or fear or anger. It has to be celebration. And then last week we talked about the wisdom that exists in creation. What do we learn when we think about the natural world? And we talked about sheep and goats and geese. What do we learn? And so after those two conversations, we come to the place we knew we must reach, which is about our responsibility, which is about our role in creation and the harm that has been caused and what we're called to do in response. And I asked you to think, as we're hearing this reading from Jeremiah, about what the prophet's words are saying to us today. And at least for me, it wasn't too hard to hear that picture of desolation as something that is not just in our future, but already being borne out in different places in the world. As we think about the environmental destruction that has happened because of our own consumption, our own notion of progress, and our notion of the Earth's value coming from what we can get out of it, rather than it being good for its own sake. But when we go back to our starting point of beauty and thanksgiving, we remember that the value of the created world is not what it brings to us, but in its own sake, for its own sake. And so taking that starting point of creation, good for its own sake, good for itself, then we come to this question of what our responsibility is, what our role is in what's happening. And we're reminded that this goodness for its own sake comes from God, that it's grounded in a sense of the divine which exists within creation, that the world is loved by God. Not just us, also us, but not just us. In the book of Jeremiah, we hear this image of destruction coming about because of the threat of war, the threat of the Babylonians who are in the process of invading, the destruction that will result from war. And we hear that now. We see that in our world now, and we see the other kinds of destruction that are happening. And when we think of the prophets, we think of them as warnings and also of offerers of vision. Men and women who said, "But this is possible. But even in these hard places, there is a vision of hope. There's a sense of possibility." And I think that's true. I think that in the choices that we make to care for the earth, they're deeply grounded in a vision of justice for all. And I'll give some examples. One of the things that we think about in caring for the earth is the need to not consume as much, to not require as many resources for us to live. I don't mean physically consume as in food, although in some cases that's true, but I mean more in terms of the objects that we buy. And much of our purchases are one-time use purchases. Even things that we value, like books. So, books. What is an environmental solution to this that relates to books? That would be libraries. Exactly. And what else are libraries besides a way to not produce as many books, not to destroy as many trees? Libraries are also an image of justice, a place where everyone can come and have access to resources, access to books and literature and computer programs and online sites, regardless of how much money you have, regardless of what kind of family you come from. It's something that is open to all. And as people who have the choice about whether to buy books or to support a library system, our choice to support libraries is not just an environmental choice, but a choice for an image of justice. And there are also little free libraries. Do you know the one that's up two blocks up there? And this is just another instance of an image of resource sharing, saying this one item doesn't need to be produced again for me or for you. It can be shared. And not shared with conditions, but shared by anyone who walks by and thinks, I want to read that book, and then can end up in another little free library. So, we have libraries. Do you know about the Toronto Tool Library? Yeah, some of you do? All right, the Toronto Tool Library, there's also the Toronto Kitchen Library. And both of these are based on the premise that we don't all need to have the same things. Not everyone here needs a hammer. How often do you use a hammer? Okay, maybe a few times a year. Unless you're a real carpenter. So we don't all need to own hammers. We don't all need to buy fancy saws and other tools. Instead, we could create a library of these things, a central resource where these can be shared rather than needing to have new ones produced for each person who suddenly needs to hang a picture. And the same thing with the kitchen library. And these are initiatives that are about sharing our resources. Anyone who pays the membership fee, and this one does have a fee, has access to all of these resources. It's not based on whether or not you can afford a fancy bandsaw. You still have access. Another image of resource sharing and justice is public transport. And I don't remember who said this, but I heard someone once say, what should our vision of a city be? A just city. Should it be a city where everyone is able to drive a car? Or a city where everyone chooses to take public transportation? That's a place where the environmental and the justice intersect, where the two are part of the same vision. And each of us has hindrances. It's not that each of these options applies well to us, but we choose the ways that we are going to care for the earth. And sometimes we choose the ways that are a little less convenient, a little bit more challenging, because we think that vision of justice and our responsibility to the earth makes it worthwhile to do something that's more difficult. makes it worthwhile to do something that's a little bit more inconvenient, a little bit harder, to ask us to call into question the choices that we make. And it looks different for everyone. So for me, one of the ways that I try to do this is by being vegetarian. And I started out by eating less meat, and originally it wasn't an environmental decision, it was an economic decision because I was a student. And I didn't have a lot of money, and meat's expensive. And so I, you know, spent time cooking with lentils and beans and finding recipes that were healthy and delicious and not too expensive. And I still ate meat sometimes. And then I read a book. It's called Eating Animals by Jonathan Safran Foer. And he wrote about different reasons that people choose to be vegetarian. And what was really striking was the environmental argument. The argument that if everyone ate the amount of meat that we do in North America, it wouldn't be sustainable. It would not be possible to feed everyone in the world the way we eat. And so for me, it became a personal choice to say, I'll step back from this unsustainable practice rather than exerting my privilege and saying, I'm able to eat this way, when not everyone is. Now, that's a personal decision, and I'm not saying that everyone here has to become vegetarian, but there are different ways that we think about where our environmental responsibility and our commitment to justice intersect for us. It might be living in a smaller house or moving to a smaller apartment, knowing that this will carry fewer energy costs and have a lower impact on the environment. That might correspond to also being safer in the long run as we grow older. But that doesn't have to be the primary reason for doing it. And it's also not necessary to make these huge changes. It's not necessary to say, tomorrow and for the rest of my life, I will be vegetarian. Because every time you make that individual choice, you are making a difference. And if each of us goes and rents and borrows one book from the library rather than buying it, as a community, that has a huge impact. If each of us chooses one trip that we will walk instead of driving, as a community, that has a huge impact. So there's many different ways that we can do this. There's many different ways in our life that we might look at these choices. And I know for myself, it's an ongoing process of finding the ways that I can live responsibly in the world. It hasn't happened all at once. It's been a series of small decisions that lead to the way that I live. And that continues to change as where I work and where I'm living changes, what my stage of life is, the difference between being a student and being a professional. And so I'm not telling you what decisions to make, but I'm encouraging you to think there's always one more decision that I could make. And it might be tiny, or it might be larger. But together, as a community, it has an impact. I know the next one that I want to work on is reducing my waste, the waste produced. And I think you've probably heard of the three R's, right? Reduce, reuse, recycle. I've just come across the five R's, which includes the three R's in the middle, reduce, reuse, recycle, but it starts with refuse. Just don't take, you know, like the free samples that are given out that you don't actually need. Are those promotional things that you don't actually need? Just refuse. Don't get there in the first place. And then the last one, so it can be an R, I suppose, is rot. making sure we compost, that we don't let our organic products end up in the landfill. So there you go, 5 R's. Refuse, reduce, reuse, recycle, and rot. That's something that I have been trying to work on and that I want to continue working on because I know I have quite a ways to go. I was listening to a TED Talk this week by Monica Araya. She doesn't actually say her name in the talk, so I'm not sure if that's how it's pronounced. That's my best guess based on seeing it written, which is called A Small Country with Big Ideas to Get Rid of Fossil Fuels. She's from Costa Rica. And Costa Rica has moved to producing their energy only through green sources. She talks about the green sources that they've chosen. She talks about different decisions the country has made in order to be more environmentally responsible. And she says that the last hurdle that her country faces is the reliance on fossil fuels for transportation. And she says it's possible. It's possible for us over the next decade or two to move all of our transportation over to electricity. Our electricity being produced is green. All we need to do is move our transportation over, and we're no longer reliant on fossil fuels. She says this is achievable for us as a country, but only if we're willing to make changes. Only if we're willing to think differently about the way we structure our lives and our reliance on vehicles. She put up a picture of rush hour. It takes many people a couple hours commute to get in and back from work. And that's a familiar sight for us. We know that that is a common experience now. It's about shifting the way we think about it. So it looks a little different, but she says it's possible. She says developing countries are probably going to be the ones that lead the way. Not us here in North America, because we can get away with not changing. But developing countries. Now, I guess we could wait for developing countries to lead the way. Or we can think about what do we here do even when we don't have to. Even when we're not going to be the ones most impacted by the choices we make. And these small decisions that we make as individuals may not seem like much. And more will be asked, whether it's from us or from those who come after us. But together, as a community, they make a difference. And we make these choices not out of fear or guilt or anger, but out of celebration, out of thanksgiving for the goodness of creation and the desire to see that goodness protected and shared and continued, not just for the next days and next years, but the next decades and centuries. Because in that goodness, we see sacred love. We hear those words that are so precious. It is good. It is very good. Thanks be to God. Amen.